I thank you for so kindly coming to attend this auspicious event tonight. It is my honor and privilege to be amongst you. I was asked to speak on the subject, the power of love. Perhaps this is the broadest and deepest of all subjects, which can be approached from many angles of perception. Let us begin by examining the idea of love as it is known in the world we live in today. When two people say, "Let us make love," what does that mean? Who would like to say? You have all heard this expression, to make love. It means sexual experience. In the name of love, this is the practical idea that people are very much influenced by. Kama, or lust. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that metal is one. There is gold and there is iron. Love is like gold, and kama, or lust, is like iron. It is so influential in the world. That is the basic theme of the movies. They spend hundreds of millions of dollars on some movies. And they make profits sometimes of billions of dollars on movies. Yes? And they're usually love stories. Somehow or other, that always has to be a part. And on the television screen, we have our satellite antennas. People all over the world. Recently, I was with one American godbrother. We were driving through some very downtrodden, poverty-stricken area of Bombay, where people were living in little tin shacks with burlap bags as doors. But practically every house had a television antenna on top. And mostly, what is the subject? Various type of love stories. Advertising. One of the greatest ways of promoting any product, whether it's paper or glue, is with a beautiful woman or a handsome man, to somehow or other connect that need to express passion that's within the heart toward their product. Fashions are very much to attract the opposite sex, to awaken passion. Krishna says in Gita, Kama esha krodha esha rajoguna shamudbhava mahashno mahapapa. That it is lust, it is kama, only Arjuna, this great symbol of sin, which is later transformed into wrath when unfulfilled, which is the all-devouring, sinful enemy of this world. The scriptures declare that this material universal creation is my punya agar, which means everyone is shackled by these attractions of sex. The power of perverted love. The power of this kama is so great, it drives people mad. It defeats even the greatest conquerors of the world. Historically, shall we examine both from the Western and Eastern point of view this subject matter? Just to give it a very universal idea. In the Old Testament, the Western scripture, there was the most powerful man in the world. His name was Samson. Before he was born, an angel appeared to his parents and told him, "Your son will be very powerful and he will free the Israelites from slavery by his great strength, but never cut his hair." So he was born, his father dedicated him to God, and he had such feats of strength. What a powerful man he was. One time he was walking in the forest, and a man-eating terrible lion came to attack. And he wrestled that lion and ripped him open, took his hands in his mouth and just ripped him apart. Then later he came back and he saw that bees made a hive and put honey in his mouth, and he drank that honey. Later on, the Philistines, powerful armies of the ruling tribes of that part of the world, 1,000 of them attacked. They all had weapons. He had nothing. As they were attacking, he saw a dead donkey's jawbone laying on the ground. And he picked up that jawbone, and within minutes, 10,000 Philistines were dead. His career was like that. He was the most powerful. But he fell in love with a woman. Her name was Delilah. And the Philistine kings, they understood the power of love. So they bribed Delilah. They gave her large quantity. They said, "We will give you large quantities of silver. You just somehow or other, by your feminine powers, find out where he gets his strength from so we can tie him up and capture him." So very sweet, nectarine words she was whispering in his ears. "Please tell me, oh beloved, where do you get your strength from? How can you be tied up? Please tell." He said, "Ah, If someone takes 7 bowstrings and ties them around my body, I will not be able to escape. So she sang very, very sweet lullaby song, and he fell asleep. And she tied him up with 7 bowstrings. And then she had the Philistine soldiers outside. She said, "The Philistines are coming!" He just ripped those bowstrings apart. So they ran away. He didn't see them. So the next night she said, "Why did you cheat me? I never cheat you. You say you love me. Tell me, how can you be tied up? If I am wrapped around my body with brand new ropes that have never used before, then I cannot escape." So she sang some sweet songs and he fell asleep and she tied him up with ropes. And then she said, "The Philistines are coming!" He ripped apart the ropes. Should I continue? Sometime later, she said, "My dear love, please satisfy my heart and I will fulfill all your desires. How can you be tied up?" He said, "If my 7 strands of hair are tied together and put into a loom, then I will not be able to move." So he fell asleep and she did it. "The Philistines are coming!" Ripped his hair right out of the loom. Ah, she was desperate for that silver. She just put all the power of her passion and presented it to him. If you really love me, if you really want me to be with you, then you must tell me. And she began to breathe on him and do various massages on him and look at him with great passionate glances, and his heart melted. And plus, he just didn't want to keep hearing this from this woman anyway, because he wanted to do other things with her besides talk about these things. So he became completely bewildered, deluded, infatuated by Delilah. And he said, "I will now tell you the truth. If anyone cuts off my hair, I will be like any ordinary man." So she sang sweet, sweet, passionate songs of love. And he fell asleep. And his hair was cut off. And she said, "The Philistines are coming!" And they just picked him up and put him, bound him with ropes, and imprisoned him and made him a slave. And she got the silver. Haribo. So here was a man who could conquer single-handedly thousands of people with weapons when he had nothing himself. He was the unconquerable champion of all warriors. But he was conquered by love, by passion, by that great need within the heart. In the Old Testament of the Jews and the Christians, as well as the Islamic faith, there is the King David. He was such a powerful king. There was a giant over 3 meters tall named Goliath. There were 2 armies, the Philistines and the Israelites. And Goliath was the strongest man on earth. He just came forward and said, "I dare to fight any of you. If I win, you all become our slaves. If you win, we all become your slaves." He had armor all around him and a massive javelin and a sword. Just by looking at him, everyone ran away. And one little shepherd who used to just sing and take care of sheep. His father had his elder sons in the army of the king. He said, go bring him some food. So he brought, and he saw this Goliath, and nobody could come before him. They were defeated just looking at him. So he said, I will do it. Huh. It was a joke. This little keeper of sheep against the most powerful warrior on earth. So Goliath looked at him. What is this? And David had no weapon. He just picked up some stones from a river. And he had a little catapult made out of wood. That's all he had. And Goliath says, what an insult! This little shepherd boy is coming to fight me? I will destroy you, and you will be the food for the jackals and the birds. This is universal language amongst Kshatriyas. And little David, he said, you may be armed with a javelin and a sword and your big, big, strong body, but I am armed by the power of God. Then he picked up a stone and went, and it hit Goliath on the head, and it cracked his skull, and he fell down dead. Ah. So this David became king later on, and he was general, victorious in all of his efforts in war. What a powerful personality he was. But one time in the afternoon, he came out of his palace on the roof terrace, and he looked down, and he saw a very beautiful woman taking her bath, because he was way up high, so he could see in other people's houses. So in the courtyard of her compound wall, she was taking a bath without clothes. Ah, that was the end of David. In one sense. That was the end of his moral vows. He's the king. He sent a messenger. Say the king wants to see her. So she came to see the king. And he had a sexual affair with her. Then he sent her home. And he decided, I want to marry her. But there's a problem. She's already married. How to resolve this problem? Her husband, her name was Bathsheba. And her husband was Uriah. So he called Uriah, who happened to be a warrior, and said, there's a big battle, I need you to fight. And he gave him a secret letter, messenger, to the general. He said, you take this and you fight. So he gave the letter, the general opened it up, and it said, go to the most powerful part of the enemy's army. Attack it. With Uriah in the front lines, and then everyone else should retreat and leave him there to die. And that's what happened. Oh, so sad he was when he informed Bathsheba that her husband had died. And then he married her. But then the messenger of God said, you have sinned, and you will suffer. And generations of your descendants will suffer. And his own son died as a reaction. Such terrible, sinful reactions. Immorality. Why? Because he was conquered by the power of
God.
Very good. All respects to these great souls, but there is good lessons of the power of lust. Even the greatest conquerors are conquered by lust. In our Vedic scriptures, we have the great Kashyapa Muni performing such severe tapasya. But Diti, she was feeling extremely passionate. And she pulled on him right when he was in the middle of his doing his religious activities. And he could not withstand. And he came together with his wife at a very, very inauspicious, inappropriate time. And what was the result? The birth of Hiranyakashipu and his brother, Hiranyaksha. Then we have the stories of Indra. He's the king of heaven. Most powerful of the devatas. With his thunderbolt, he rules over the demigods. But yet Indra, when he saw the beauty of Ahalya, somehow or other, what happened? He could not restrain from being, he was just conquered by lust. Conquered by lust, with all obeisances to the feet of Indra. And he disguised himself as her husband, Gautam Rishi, and had an affair with her. And then Gautam Rishi happened to come and cursed him. That his eye, that his whole body would be covered. Eventually with eyes. Indra, conquered by love. And then we have the greatest of the yogis, Vishwamitra. He was so powerful. In the summer, he could sit for months at a time without eating or drinking in the desert with 12 fires around him blazing, sitting in rapt meditation, controlling his mind and senses. And in the winter, he would do the same in the peaks of the Himalayas, up to his neck in the water of the Ganga. How he could control his mind and senses. So powerful, even Indra feared him. Indra sent Menaka. Was Menaka, did she have mystic powers like Vishwamitra? Not at all. But she had the power to attract lust within the heart. Just by the tinkling of her bracelets and her ankle bells, he was conquered by... Correct. And there's the great Sobari Muni. He was such a great ascetic. How he can control his body, mind, and senses. Compare yourself to him. He could go underwater for months at a time, absorbed in samadhi. How many of you could do that even sitting on a nice couch? Powerful person. But he happened to see two fish, a male and female, having an affair together. And he was conquered by the power of... Correct. We have spoken about histories in the history books. Now look at today's society. In the Western world, powerful Christian preachers. There was this, Jimmy Baker? He had millions of followers. He was on television. If he would say, give a donation, hundreds and thousands of dollars would be coming within minutes into his hands. He had such power to speak. And he was speaking morality, ethics, dedication, and faith. And then he was caught having illicit sex with prostitutes. And what happened? He was conquered by
lust.
And when he was exposed, he lost everything. He ended up in prison. Plus, he exploited a lot of money, too. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, money and the opposite sex are the greatest dangers. He fell to both. And then there was an even more powerful evangelist, Jimmy Swaggart. And he was telling the world, this Baker was just a bogus person. He's immoral. He's unethical. He had tens and millions of followers. He would go to a stadium and tens and thousands of people would come to hear his words. Millions would hear him on television every day. And they found somebody took videos of him leaving his wife in the middle of night to go to the houses of prostitution. And they showed it on television, on a competing network. He was finished. He lost all of his followers. He lost all of his credibility. He was conquered by the power of
lust.
Correct. And the Indian yogis and gurus, those very, very famous yogis, some of them lived in Himalayas for many, many years. I don't want to mention names. The Western names I don't mind mentioning in India. But I don't want to publicly mention their names. You may know, you may not know. But some of these great yogis, some of these great gurus with millions of disciples, some with hundreds and thousands of disciples, some of them have mystic powers. They teach meditation, they teach asanas, they perform miracles. Just off the top of my head, I could think of about 8 of them. Most famous. And each one of them have been exposed for scandals of illicit sex with women. Some with men. And some of them lost everything. Conquered by the power of my own experience. When I was perhaps younger than all of you, I was about 19 or 20. I lived in Bodh Gaya, the place where Buddha attained enlightenment. I was studying Buddhism there. Tibetan Buddhism, Burmese Buddhism, Zen Buddhism. And for some time I was studying under a Zen Buddhist master. This, of course, is before I came to Krishna. And this Zen Buddhist master was so powerful person. He had such influence. He had a crowd of Indians and Europeans and Americans. Not a big crowd, but he had a crowd. And he would have them. All you were allowed to eat was raw barley soaked in salt water once a day. Haribo. And you had to sit in meditation for about 12 hours a day. And during the group meditations, you weren't allowed to move. And if you moved, he would be, his meditation was watching to see if you'd move. He had a bamboo stick. And if you just moved your neck, whack. But he would preach such intense detachment from all sense gratification whatsoever. It's all an illusion. The material world is an illusion. You have to break through this illusion, attain nirvana. In order to do so, you have to completely renounce all sensory pleasures and completely be fixed in meditation. One night, one of his students went out in the middle of the night to respond to the calls of nature. And he saw a young lady coming out of his kutir. So he watched a second time. And then he asked the lady, "What are you doing in there?" She told him, there were some foreigners there. They became so upset with this yogi, with this Zen master. They decided, we're going to find out the truth of him. So every day they would take tea, and they secretly put LSD in his tea. Haribo. And while he was under the influence of LSD, they told him that we know that you are a cheater. You have been conquered by Haribo. They all left him. He was left with nothing. His name was ruined, although he was a famous Japanese Zen master, traveling all over the world. Many of the biggest gurus of India have lost everything, conquered by the power of a few years ago, who was the single most powerful political figure in the world? The President of the United States. Not the present one, but the previous one. I will not mention names. And he was not only famous because he was the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines. They were at his disposal. He was the most popular president in America. And he was speaking about morality and ethics. But you have all heard the story. Although so powerful, so big, so popular, so famous, how much he suffered, how much he lost, because he was conquered by the power of
us.
Correct. The greatest misery in the 14 worlds is when this so-called love is frustrated. I remember a song. If you have a bad headache, some aspirin will do. If you have a backache, some rubbing with oil will do. But if you have a broken heart, there is nothing you can do. People sing about it. People write books and dramas about it. There's no greater pain than a broken heart. When that propensity, that need to love is reposed in someone, and then that someone cheats you or deserts you or dies, there's no greater pain. Rarely do people commit suicide due to physical miseries. Even people with cancer, even people dying of terminal diseases, rarely do they commit suicide. But when their lover leaves them, they cannot face life. You know the famous words of William Shakespeare, "To be or not to be, that is the question." Do you know what that is in reference to? Romeo and Juliet. Edipo. Romeo loved Juliet, and Juliet loved Romeo. It is a common tale, but true. But somehow, by the interference of the parents and the society, they were not allowed to associate with one another. They tried everything, but when they understood it was impossible for them to marry or to be together, to be or not to be, that is the question. Should we live or should we die? And they found the only refuge to their misery was death through suicide. They were both conquered by
us.
Correct. And we find in the world today, when love is frustrated, kama esha, krodha esha, it oftentimes just blazes into the fire of anger. The world is histories of men who kill other men and women who kill other women because they have violated the faithfulness of the one they love. We have personally seen. Man comes home and sees his lover with another man. Before he even knows whether it's day or night, the man is shot in 10 places in the head. Just uncontrollable anger. This is the common theme that police departments have to deal with. There is no greater pain than frustrated love. The love of this world is so deep. The love of a mother for her child. What austerities is that woman willing to do for her child? No one else will they be willing to stay up all night, every night, just to take care of? 24-hour call. You practically can't even pay someone to do what a mother does for a child. Do you agree? A mother is willing to sacrifice her life in total out of love for her child. And a father, out of his love for his wife, out of his love for his children, sometimes fathers work all day long, 6 days a week, foaming at the mouth like a burst of beaten, beast of burden. Why? Never questions. The love of a father for his children can be so very, very deep. When I was living in Vrindavan, first time I gave my parents an address they could write to me in some years. And I got a letter from my father, who in separation from me, every page of that letter was the ink was bathed in his tears. His handwriting was from a hand that was shaking in misery. And he signed it, "Your broken-hearted father." My brother wrote to me. He said, "Your father, you're killing him. His hair is turning gray. He just looks at a daze into the sky and cries, just wondering where you are and when you will come home. You will murder your father if you do not come home." And I talked to the great spiritual master I was living with at that time. And I showed him the letter. And he said, "For a person to take into the renounced order of life, this is part of the test, to break the heart of the father." I understood, what is the power of a father's love? But the happy ending is, since he's come to Radha Gopinath Temple, he's very happy and he chants Hare Krishna. The power of love between lovers. In the United States of America, in the middle of the 19th century, there was a civil war. Have you heard of the Civil War of America? The entire nation was divided, north and south, and each one built up massive armies to fight and conquer each other over economic and ideological conflicts. One nation became two enemies. Hundreds and hundreds and thousands, if not millions, of people died in that bloody war that lasted years. And they didn't have much time to send people to training camps. They would just recruit men. Any young men, they would just recruit them, put a gun in their hand, and send them to the battlefields. There are histories, please listen carefully. There are histories of that, of a man who was being drafted into the army's lover. A sweet, innocent young woman. It was so unbearable to be without her husband, knowing that he may never return home alive, that they would tie back their hair and put men's clothing on and enlist in the army to be their husband's comrades. And they would be in the front lines and they would die together. That is the power of correct. Here in India, it was a tradition of a rite called sati. Today, it is properly banished and outlawed because of its corrupt application. But previously, the bind of the hearts of affection between a husband and a wife was so deep that if a husband died, the woman, there was just no question that she could continue living. It was utterly too painful. When the husband's body was set afire on the pyre, she would willingly, usually the relatives would beg her not to do it. The children would beg her not to do it. But she would willingly enter into the fire because she simply could not possibly bear the anguish of living in separation of her lover. That is the power. Now let us examine what is the origin of that most powerful conqueror of all conquerors within this world. And why is it all pervading? This is a very, very essential question in life. The material body is declared in Bhagavad Gita to be yantra, like a machine. Who is the passenger within this vehicle of the human body? Or for that matter, the body of all species of life. It is the Atma. Atma refers to the body, to the mind, and to the eternal soul, depending on our consciousness. Atma means self. Those who are under the delusion that they are this body, they think their body is the self, so that is their Atma. Those who are on a subtler platform think that their mind is the self. But the life-giving force of the body and the mind is the Atma, the soul. When that soul leaves this body, the body is dead. Like a vehicle without a driver, it can do nothing. feed it to the birds, put it in the ground, feed it to the fish, or put it in fire. Where is that person we love? If he's the body, why we're disposing of him? The real person is the soul. The person who loves and the person who is the object of love is the soul. What is the nature of that soul? It is Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. Anandamayo vyasat. Because our nature is ananda. Our nature is blissful. We cannot live without bliss. It is our integral constitutional position to enjoy ecstatic fulfillment. That is why every living being is looking for pleasure. We all have that in common. Whether we're Indian or American or Pakistani or Russian or African or Chinese, or we're Eskimos in the Arctic Circle, we're all looking for pleasure. We're all trying to protect ourselves from that which disturbs our pleasure. That is called pain. Because the soul is pleasure seeking. And within this world, what is the highest pleasure? And what is the cause of the deepest, most unbearable pain? Love. Are you convinced of this? It is love. You can have money. You can have fame. You can have health. But if you don't have love, your life is empty. It's frustrated. It's not fulfilled. There's a history, recent histories. I think it was in the 1960s or 70s. The most famous musician, he had millions of young ladies screaming just upon seeing him. What to speak of when he played his guitar and sang. Women would fall unconscious.
Haribo.
He made millions and millions and millions of dollars. He was famous. He had big mansion, beautiful cars, everything a man could want. But then he found his wife betraying him. Hare Krishna. He went out with a shotgun shooting at her in a car. Totally frustrated. He had everything in the world, but he was miserable. Why? Because he was conquered by lust. It is the essential need within the heart of every living being to love and to be loved. Depending on our free will of how and where we decide to direct that propensity to love, that propensity for pleasure, that we will come under the subjugation of either the material or spiritual energies of the Lord. For those who direct that propensity to love and be loved towards selfish, egoistic, temporary experiences. They come under the control of Mahamaya. And this Mahamaya is very, very powerful. Daivi yeshu gunamayi mamamaya duratyaya. Krishna says this Maya is very, very difficult to overcome. Because she is the Lord's, the Supreme Absolute Truth. External material energy. And what is her greatest, most powerful weapon? Material love. Maituna Agar means that we are all in the Durga, the prison house of Mahamaya. But what an unbelievable creation this prison house is. In America, in the 1940s and 1950s, the most high security federal prison was Alcatraz. Have you heard of that? Alcatraz was an island off the coast of California. And they selected a place where there were shark-infested waters. They would even regularly throw blood in the water just to attract thousands and thousands of sharks to just be swimming around all around the island. And then on the island, there was gigantic, thick, solid stone walls, several tiers of them. On top of the walls was barbed wire and other kinds of razor-sharp devices. And every several feet, there was armed guards with machine guns to keep the prisoners from escaping. And you know something? Still, so many prisoners escaped. Haribo. But Durga, Mahamaya, she has created a prison house. No walls, no bars, but no one can escape. Because no one's in shackles and chains. We all remain in this world prisoners because we cannot escape the power of and we don't even want to. What an incredible prison. To make a prison where nobody wants to escape, even though they're suffering terribly. No need, no need. This is the power of Mahamaya. But when we direct our natural loving propensities toward the spiritual energy of Yogamaya, Daivihyeshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mami vamye prapadyante mayame tatarandite, then we can easily cross over it. It is described that this bhava sagar, this material ocean, it is unlimited in how deep it is, how wide it is, and how long it is. No one can cross it. But for one who surrenders to Murari, to the Supreme Absolute, the entire ocean of material existence becomes no more difficult to overcome than the water contained within the footprint of a calf. Baby cow. people who have intelligence, who see that all of their efforts, birth after birth after birth, to find pleasure through the love of this world, is frustrated. They often take to the process of annihilation. Annihilation of material desires, annihilation of material conceptions, thinking that this body, this personality, these desires are all causes of suffering, so let me be free of all of them and enter into the impersonal existence of the Supreme. Aham Brahmasmi. Impersonal liberation is a genuine spiritual level of transcendental experience. It is partial. Impersonal liberation means transcending the worlds of the aspiration for love through material dualities and entering into the all-pervading sky of spiritual light, where there is no birth, old age, disease, death. There's no frustrations of our desires, because our desires are sleeping. However, the Shastras explain that from that state, eventually, one falls down again into material dualities. Why? Because although there is perfect relief from all sufferings, we have not fulfilled the essential need of the soul, which is to reciprocate pure love. Brahmiti paramatmiti bhagavaniti sabjate. Therefore, the great acharyas and our great scriptures declare that the highest, most complete realization of the absolute truth is Bhagavan. The supreme personality of Godhead, who possesses all opulences in full, who is the source and the completeness of all beauty, knowledge, strength, wealth, fame, and renunciation. The absolute truth is called upon by the name Krishna. There are many names of God. Krishna is the all-inclusive name, because Krishna is all attractive. Krishna has the power to attract all of our soul's propensities to love. He is the ultimate object of everyone's love, universally. Sri Rupa Goswami, he wrote, if you are attached to material wealth, society, friendship, or love of this world, do not go to Jamuna on the banks of Keshi Ghat. Because standing there in his threefold bending form with a peacock feather in his hair, playing the flute, is Govinda. When you see him, your heart will be stolen. Param drishtva nivartate. We can transcend all of the passions of this world when we experience the unlimited pleasure of Krishna's love. Sripad Jamunacharya of the Ramanuj Sri Sampradaya prayed, that I was terribly addicted to sex life and the pleasures of this world. But now that I have tasted the sweetness of serving Krishna, when I think of these passionate things of the world, my lips curl in distaste and I spit at the thought. When Krishna plays upon his flute, his love, which permeates the holes of that flute, permeate the entire atmosphere of Vrindavan, and all living beings become captivated. The Jamuna River, which is flowing downstream, starts flowing upstream. The wind stops to hear. The cows lift their ears to drink the nectar and become motionless. The calves that are drinking the milk from their mother become so much inundated by love for Krishna that they cannot even suck. Tears flow from their eyes and they embrace Krishna within their hearts, heart to heart. The little baby gopas, the little baby children, they just start crying. They want to run out to the pastures, even though they can't walk, to be with Krishna. The gopas, they dance and they cry in ecstasy. And the gopis, they are willing to leave everything. They are willing to leave their families, their homes, their protection, even their social ethics. They're willing to renounce everything. Completely consumed by love for Krishna. That is the power of Krishna's love. Aham bija pratapita. Krishna is the Supreme Mother and the Supreme Father of all living beings. And what is His love? Birth after birth after birth. Even though the living being rejects and rebels against, still Krishna, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata, continues to descend within this world. Continues to empower His devotees, the sadhus, to attract our hearts back to His eternal abode of transcendental love. It is love of Krishna that is the essential constitutional nature of every living being. Within the scriptures, there are primarily various purusharthas or goals. Artha, kama, dhamma, moksha. People perform religious activities, sacrifices, pujas, charity, worship to get material wealth, to get a greater degree of sense gratification, or when frustrated by these, for liberation, moksha. Muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayana sudurlabha prasantatma kotishvapi mahamuni. But even those persons who have all of these things, they can never really be peaceful. Because it is not their nature. Without love of Krishna, whatever arrangement we make, whatever spiritual realization we gain, even mystic powers, even liberation, we are like fish trying to be happy outside of the sea. You can imagine you're happy if you have all phantasmagoric devices around you. but a fish can never find real satisfaction laying in the hot sand. Nor can the spirit soul find satisfaction in any arrangement that is contrary to our eternal nature, which is to eternally be swimming in the nectar of devotion, the nectar of ecstatic love. In this world, universally, how persons inspired by love of God are able to renounce all of the pleasures of this world. In the Western religions, Saint Francis of Assisi, his father was the most wealthy merchant in the whole town. And he was to inherit everything. But when he tasted a drop of the strong inclination to love God, he gave it all up. He wanted to just become a total renunciate. In fact, his father imprisoned him in a closet in the house to not let him go. Can you imagine? He's offering him massive amounts of money, fame, prestige, property, and he wants to escape, and he has to be imprisoned in that situation, but he escaped. To live a life of total material poverty, but always in the fulfillment. Because he tasted some drop of love for God. Recently I was in Italy. There's a place called Padua. Gigantic cathedral! With thousands and thousands of people from all over the world coming every single day, and on festival days, tens and thousands! It's the Samadhi for Saint Anthony, who also came from a wealthy family, renounced everything, lived total poverty in devotion to God. There's no kings. There's no wealthy multimillionaires. Though there's no athletic stars. Or dramatic scriptwriters, that 700 years after his death, there's millions of people coming to see him and pray to him. And gigantic Colosseum, not Colosseum, cathedral in his honor. We read about Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. They were the prime minister and finance home minister of the whole kingdom. Fabulous wealth, massive palaces, beautiful estates, fame, prestige, youth, beauty, everything. But when they met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, their love awakened. And on the basis of that love, they renounced everything. On the basis of that love, Sanatana Goswami was willing to go to prison. And ultimately in Vrindavan, they would sleep under different trees every night, wearing tattered cloth. Doing madhukari, begging for some roti. Giving up multi-millions for poverty, materially. But their eyes were always saturated with love of God. They wanted to share the ultimate wealth with the world because they were conquered by the power of
love.
But this is real love. Raghunath Das Goswami. He was the only child of the entire family. Two brothers, Govardhan Hiranya Majumdar. They were landholders with mass wealth, power, prestige. He was young, he was handsome. He got married to a woman who was more beautiful than an angel. Would you like that? Be honest. Millions of dollars. Beautiful, beautiful estate. Tens and thousands of people working for you. Popularity and fame. Youth and beauty. And having a wife like an angel. How many of you honestly would be happy to receive such a benediction? He wanted to give it up. He would run away from home every night. People are running to these things and he's running away from these things. His parents had to have 12 guards on 24-hour alert in strict vigilance guarding him day and night from escaping his material luxuries and beautiful wife, Haribol. But he escaped. His mother said, at one time before he escaped, his mother said, "We should tie him with ropes and chains to keep him home." And father said, if a beautiful wife, if all this wealth, all this fame, all this prestige, if this doesn't keep him here, then what will some chains do? He has been affected by love, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. He gave up everything. He lived in Puri and later in Vrindavan. He just slept under trees. Just take a little palmful of buttermilk every few days. But yet, people from all over the world, rich people, simple people, people of all walks of life go to the banks of Sri Radha Kund to bow their head at the Bhajan Kutir and Samadhi Mandir of Raghunath Das Goswami, begging for the wealth that he had, the wealth of love. He was a man who was truly conquered by the power of
love.
Correct. And we have the example of Srila Haridas Thakur living in a cave, chanting Krishna's names with love, feeling Krishna's love. Maya Devi herself came for 3 nights with all of her powers to attract him to the love that conquers everyone in this world. That same Maya that deluded Samson and Delilah, that deluded David and Bathsheba, that same power of Maya that conquered Kashyapa, Sobari Muni, Vishwamitra Muni, Indra, that same power that conquered so many great yogis, gurus, and sages of today and of the past. Both in the East and in the West, that conquered the President of the United States. That same power of Maya, when she creates frustration within your heart due to not fulfilling the demands of love, creates havoc, suicide, anger, murder. She came before Haridas Thakur with all of her powers of love to conquer him. Do you know the story? She tried everything. And in the end, Haridas Thakur proved that because of his love for Krishna, which is manifested through the chanting of the holy names, he had not even the slightest inclination toward all the powers of lust that conquer all the greatest conquerors throughout history in the material world. And Mayadevi surrendered to him and begged him for initiation into the Hare Krishna mantra. Because Haridas Thakur was conquered by the power of
love.
Therefore, he could conquer all the powers of lust. There is gross lust and subtle lust. Gross lust is the passion of sex, the passion to possess, the passion to create, the passion to destroy. And subtle lust is the passion for profit, adoration, and distinction. Daivihesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mamevam ye prapadyante mayame tatarantite. Krishna says, this material nature is very, very difficult to overcome, maya. But one who surrenders to me can easily cross beyond her. Param drisvani vartate. It is the higher taste everyone is longing for, everyone is living for, everyone is dying for. But it's being misdirected. The science of bhakti is so simple. In principle. But sometimes not so simple in application. Due to our habitual activities of misdirecting our propensity to love. All we have to do is take that same passion for pleasure and love and direct it to Krishna. Is it natural to smoke cigarettes? Does a child come out of the womb of the mother and say, "Give me a light"? Ravana did something like that. It's unnatural. If a person, the first time a person smokes a cigarette, they don't like it, they hate it. I've seen. Give a person his first cigarette. Do you like it? Yes, yes, it's very good. Because they want to impress people. This is just if you want to be cool, then you must like smoking cigarettes. It's a social matter. People don't do it because they like it. They do it because it's a social prestige. At the beginning, nobody knew it's harmful to the health. But then after people found out, they're addicted to it. And now it's become such a socially prestigious thing to do, to have this stick of poison hanging out of your mouth, that people don't even mind if they're going to die. In fact, it's very, very, it's very faddish. It's the heroic thing to do in this material world of prestige and society. Don't you know it says on every... When they started putting that cigarettes is dangerous to your health on each pack, people started buying more cigarettes. So heroic. I am willing to die for sense gratification. Oh, please accept my obeisances. That is the world. But then once you're addicted by that poisonous nicotine getting deep, deep into your lungs and into your into the fibers of your body, you can't give it up. So difficult. If you see a chain smoker try to give up smoking, they go through all kinds of nicotine fits. They become wild and crazy. They're just longing and longing, longing for the next cigarette. Have you seen such people? Is it natural? It's totally foreign, totally unproductive, totally unnatural, and it costs a lot too. It's easy not to smoke. It's easier not to spend your money. But because of the bad habit, we can't give it up. It's easy to love God. It's the easiest, most natural thing for the soul. To find happiness, ecstasy, and bliss eternally in Krishna. But we're addicted. We're habituated to misdirecting our loving propensities toward the temporary sources of misery of this world. Yehi samsparashacha bhoga dukkha jonaya evate atyantavanta khonte anate shuramate buddha. Krishna defines intelligence in Srimad Bhagavad Gita in this way, that an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery called sense gratification, knowing that they're temporary. But at the same time, we have to find pleasure. We have to find love. The science of bhakti is to dovetail that everlasting propensity toward its origin, Krishna. King Prataparudra, he was a great king of Orissa. Out of love, he wanted so much to serve Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna that he was willing to give up his wife, his family, his everything and become a beggar in the street. Why? Because he was conquered by power of love. He didn't have to do that. He remained a king and used everything. His family, his children, everything was used in the service of the Lord and all of his wealth and power and influence. He was a man of spiritual perfection. Not only are we conquered by Krishna's love, but the power of the love of the soul conquers Krishna. This is the ultimate understanding of the power of love. How Krishna conquers our hearts and how we can conquer Krishna's heart by our love. Sridhama is one of Gopas. He wrestles Krishna and he defeats him. Now, do you think Sridhama has such big muscles that he can actually beat in wrestling that personality whose mere expansion of expansion of expansion of expansion is Mahavishnu, who creates and destroys all cosmic manifestation? But yet Krishna is defeated by Sridhama because Krishna's greatest pleasure is to be conquered by the power of love. Krishna was stealing butter, makan chaur. And Yashoda Mai caught him. She picked up a whipping stick and carefully came behind him. And he ran away, and she was running after, and he was running away. Why does God, the source of Narasingha Dev, the source of Varaha Dev, the source of Karanadakshayi Vishnu, the source of Ramchandra, the source of the Virat Rupa, the universal form that was devouring all the Kshatriyas of the Kuru dynasty, why that person is running away from a simple lady and caught by her? And weeping and trembling in fear and begging forgiveness and ultimately allowing her to tie him up with a rope. Because Krishna takes the greatest joy in being conquered by the power of love. And gopis, Braj gopis, because they sacrificed everything with the most intense love for Krishna, Krishna is always conquered by them. You know the story of how Krishna sent his messenger to great sages and rishis and told them that I have a headache. The only cure is the dust of their feet. If I put the dust of my feet on Krishna's head, I will go to hell. I cannot do such a thing. Then he was sent to gopis. Immediately they collected all the dust they could find on their feet and put it in nice little packages and said, bring it to Krishna, go now. Don't you know what the reaction of this will be? Yes! Of course, we will go to hell forever for putting our feet on Krishna's head. But we don't mind. If we can help Krishna be relieved of his headache, even for a moment, we are willing to go to hell forever. That is love. Srimad Bhagavatam teaches the purest conception of love. Savai pung chang, savai pung sho parodharamo yato bhaktir dhokshachai. Ahoitaki aprati hata yayatma supraseded. The supreme occupation for all humanity is pure loving service to the Lord. In order for that loving service to completely satisfy the self, it must be unmotivated and uninterrupted. It must be unconditional. Selfless. The complete surrender of the heart to the object of our love. That is the constitutional need of every heart. Unconditional love for the pleasure of God. And the supreme of all gopis is Srimati Radharani. When she left Ras Lila, Krishna could not even remain happy with all others without her. Krishna told them that you have done everything for me. I have no power to repay you. I am indebted to you. The Lord of all worlds is saying, I have no power to repay you. Please just be satisfied with that love within your hearts. Krishna is completely conquered by the power of his devotees. That is the ultimate understanding of spiritual truth. And we all have that power within us, the power of love. But we have forgotten it. It has been lost. It is not gone. It is simply lost. The cloud of forgetfulness has cheated us of our real aspiration in life. God has many names, and he has appeared in various ways throughout history, throughout the various continents of this world. And he appears simply out of his love. And what is the power of that love? Even if it is not understood very well, it has such immense impact in this world. What is the single most popular book that has been read in the history to the present day in the Western world? Is it Shakespeare? Is it Tolstoy? It is the Bible, which is God's love to that sector of people in those generations. What is the number one most powerful, influential book in the Middle East? The Holy Quran. There is no comparison. It may be misunderstood, it may be abused, like so many scriptures all over the world. But still, the power of God's love has its greatest prominence in this world. And what is the single most popular, wide-read book in all of India, today and throughout history? Huh? Srimad Bhagavad Gita. No comparison. When Srila Prabhupada, our Guru Maharaj, went to the West, he was amazed. In Butler, Pennsylvania, he saw practically every block there were several churches and synagogues. In the Middle East, so many masjids. In India, how many mandirs? There is no greater influence and power in this world than the power of God. And all the power of God is the power of God's love. And when people misuse it, it becomes deadly. And when people use it properly, it becomes the source of salvation and bliss. our beloved Srila Prabhupada, who was our spiritual master. Let us briefly consider the power of his love. Real love. Love for God. When you love God, spontaneously and naturally, you love every living being. Because every living being is part and parcel of Krishna. When Srila Prabhupada was 70 years old, he arrived on the shores of America with no money, no friends, no contacts to help him. He just suffered several heart attacks, seasickness. Shortly after that, he had stroke. He could have come back to India and live in Vrindavan happily and peacefully for the rest of his life like so many others. But his heart was weeping in compassion for people who have forgotten the power of God's love and the power of their own love, which has been forgotten. The power of his love, the strength of his compassion, transformed people. Hundreds, thousands, tens and thousands. People who never heard of Krishna. People who were atheistic. People who had totally materialistic conceptions of religion. People who were addicted to drugs. People whose lives grew up with the fashion of having illicit sex as just a natural part of life. I have personally, living in America, heard parents telling their children that if a boy has not had sexual intercourse with a girl by the time he's 16 years old, he's queer. There's something wrong with him. This is what the parent is teaching the son, who's 16. Haribo. From that culture, from those generations, people who were eating meat in the womb of their mother. When Prabhupada was living in Butler, Pennsylvania, one family of an Indian man and his wife, they were feeding their infant baby child pureed beef. The child's become addicted to eating meat before he even knows what it is. Illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat-eating, atheism, rebellion. Where people reject, young generation totally rejected anything that anyone above 30 told them. And here Prabhupada was 70 years old. And they gave up illicit, sex. They gave up meat-eating. Unheard of. When I told my parents I was a vegetarian, they said, then you will die. No protein, death stands before you. They gave up all intoxications. They gave up their atheism. They shaved up their fashionable long hair with shaved heads. They gave up their cool Western clothes to wear monk robes. They put on tilak. They went out in the streets playing mridangas, playing kartals. They wanted to give the whole world love of God. Cultural revolution. Impossible, inconceivable. People ask Prabhupada, can you show me a miracle? Prabhupada said, my miracle is I have made hippies into happies. Previously, they were addicted to sense gratification, sinful activities, and atheism. And now they're pure, moral, saintly persons dedicating their lives to the service of God. He started with nothing and no one. And just in a few years, he had 108 beautiful temples, thousands of disciples, millions of books teaching the world how to love God. How was that done? By the power of his... Say it loud, please. That is the real treasure. Krishna doesn't teach in Gita that you have to renounce everything. There is a need in society for certain class of people to renounce everything to enlighten others, so that they could put their full attention on enlightening others. But the vast section of society are meant to be pure, unalloyed devotees of Krishna while being students, householders with wife, husband, children, raising them in a spirit of love for God. Engineers, businessmen, commerce, lawyers, doctors, engineers, architects, farmers, teachers, professors, bankers. There's a need for all different sectors of society. In the arts, Arjuna was a warrior. He was not told to give up his profession or family. He was told to work in a spirit of love. Work in a spirit of devotional service. By living a life with this direction, by living a life where our activities, our words, and our thoughts are systematically, scientifically being directed from Maya to Krishna, from lust to love, the same energy of the essential energy of the heart when it is directed toward the temporary perceptions of the world becomes lust. And when it is directed toward Krishna, it becomes love. That is the purpose of life. To awaken the power of love. Selfless love. There is no greater need in the world today than love. Real love. And you have that. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadya Kabunoi Sravanadi Sudhijiti Kuriya Yudhoi. That love is awakened by associating with devotees. Because in the association of devotees, we are reminded and educated in how to discover that great treasure within our hearts and share it with the world. Because we hear about Krishna. We hear the teachings of Krishna. The wonderful activities of Krishna. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo viti tatvata. Tyaktvadeham punarajanma naiti mameti surajuna. Simply by understanding the transcendental nature of Krishna's birth and activities, one never takes birth in the material world, but one attains the spiritual world by the power of
love.
Our natural propensities to act in the service, to be utilized in the service of God. And actually, any ethical, moral occupation or domestic situation we're in can be dovetailed, energized in the service of God with proper direction. That is why we require spiritual masters. The spiritual master doesn't say, worship me, I am God. The spiritual master teaches us how to love God, how to serve God. And in this age, the cloud of illusion is most effectively dissipated by the power of God's holy name. Haridas Thakur was giving a seminar to many learned personalities in a place called Chandapur. And he told them the real goal of chanting Hare Krishna mantra is not to improve material life, not even liberation, because these things are all subordinate and unfulfilling to the real need of the heart. The real goal is to awaken the dormant love of Krishna that is within our hearts. Cheto darapanam arachanam bhavamaha devagni nirvapanam. When we chant the holy name, we clean the mirror of the heart and allow the true nature of the soul to shine. And what is the nature of your soul? Pure, unalloyed, ecstatic love. When our heart becomes clean, we are conquered by God's love, and we can conquer God by our love. That is real love. There is no greater power in all creation than the power of love. It is the only power that could subdue the entire material illusion. Even one particle of a drop of love of God, when it awakens within your heart, that power could conquer all the illusions, all the sufferings of the entire material existence for all of eternity. That is why we live in harmony with the will of Krishna, because that is the only true goal and purpose of life. That is why we chant the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Because we want to be, it is our greatest longing and aspiration that we can all be conquered by the power of
love.
Correct. Thank you very much. I'm sorry for speaking so long, but it is a sublime subject matter. Is there any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna, thanks a lot for giving us such a wonderful lecture, and I consider myself very fortunate to ask a question to him. Prabhuji, my question is, like, we know from a deepest of our heart that Krishna is all attractive, but sometimes it happens that we fall too lust-like. We know that Krishna is, we know about everything, like, Krishna is all attractive. But still we fall sometime to this lust. You may call me as a fool, like knowing everything, still we fall to lust. But I don't consider myself as a devotee, but trying to be a devotee. So like people like who are in my stage, like me, how do you...
Yatato hyapikonteya purushasya vipaschita indriyani pramatini haranti prashabhammana. Krishna tells in second chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita that the senses are so strong and impetuous that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man who is striving to control them. That is your question. But then Krishna gives the answer. Thani saravani samyamya muk yukta asita matpara asehi asyandriyani tasya pragya pratishtita. That one must, according to their sincerity and capacity, we must restrain our senses from those things that are unfavorable for devotional service. And simultaneously, we must fix our consciousness on Krishna by engaging in positive activities of devotional service. In all situations, we can take shelter of Krishna by chanting his name, by associating with his devotees, by reading his books and hearing his message, by channelizing our physical energies in something that's productive service. The idle mind is the devil's workshop. When the mind is idle, it is very easily subjugated by Maya or the forces of illusion. Therefore, if we keep our mind busy with Krishna, with sincerity, in proper association, then gradually we become purified. And if we are sincere, as it is said, God helps those who help themselves. If we try according to our sincere best, Krishna will help us. But we need the association of devotees. We need the blessings of great souls. And then, yes, we can overcome all obstacles.
Well, second question is, Prabhuji, like, talking about, like, to love for Krishna, Prabhuji, but sometimes it's so difficult how to get that tinge of love of for Krishna, Prabhuji.
Same answer. The love is within you. By Krishna's mercy, it is revealed. And that mercy is realized according to our sincerity. According to our sincerity and our humility in practicing the principles of bhakti.
And like when we chant, like with what consciousness we should chant, like with what thing keeping in mind we should chant, we call up to Lord, like.
Like a child crying for its mother. We should chant the names of Krishna. We should take shelter of Krishna who has so mercifully appeared within the name. We should chant very attentively. We should chant regularly. Medicine is most effective when it is taken regularly according to the prescription of doctor or guru. We should take it regularly, very attentively, and we should chant in a prayerful mood.
But sometimes, Prabhuji, it becomes sometimes mechanically, like, we can't help it, like, all kind of tension, worries creeping on in our mind, like, and still we try to chant, but, you know,
that
Prabhuji...
That is very good. You keep trying. Then it is not mechanical. Can a machine try? Yes? No? Can a machine try? No. Machine just... Machine just does, but a machine cannot try. So the more your mind wanders, the more you try to bring it back to the name, the less it is mechanical. It is not mechanical if you are trying. If you are trying to be, a machine is not conscious. If we are trying to be conscious of Krishna by being attentive to the sound of His name, that it is not mechanical. And simply by our efforts, Krishna is pleased. That is the path of perfection. Keep trying in proper association, and you will overcome all obstacles in due course by the grace of the Lord. Yes?
Hare Krishna to one and all. Prabhuji, my first question is, what's the difference between the love of a father and mother towards their children and love of a person towards Lord Krishna?
There are many differences. One is your relationship to the relation of the mother and father to children is based on their body. The child has come from their body. But their body will die. And where will the love be? And the children's body will die. Where will the love be? It will be a cause of pain rather than a cause of happiness. So it's based on temporary misconception that I am my body and they are their body. But real love is understanding that I am the eternal soul and I am part and parcel of the supreme soul, Krishna. That love is eternal. That love only increases to a higher dimension after death. And it keeps increasing to higher dimensions in this life. And when you have that love, you'll have real, pure, unalloyed love for your children. And everyone else's children too. Therefore it is perfect love. Yes.
Is it possible to convert the love into the lust? Yeah, lust into the love. As Tulsidas Goswami Ji Maharaj writes in Ramcharitmanas at one place that Kame Nari Piyari Jim Lovi Priya Jimidam Timi Raghunath Nirantara Priya Lagahum Ram. So how it may be possible, please explain this.
The whole lecture was explaining how it is possible. For the past 2 hours, we have been explaining how it is possible.
Yeah.
By chanting Hare Krishna, it is possible.
The negative aspects of life, as we daily see people dying in front of our eyes, so it's very easy to understand, very easy to grasp that this world is a house of miseries. But the positive aspects of life, if you tell me to chant every day, I'll get something that is spiritual, it's difficult to understand. In other words, if you tell me that if you don't study, you'll fail, it's very easy for me to understand. If you tell me that if you study regularly, you'll pass. It will be a little difficult. How do you go about it?
What is that? I'm not clear of what your question is.
As we have learned in the past year, there are two aspects of life. Negative aspects, this life is a life is a house of miseries. Daily we see so many people dying in front of our eyes. It's right. You see people suffering every day. So it's right. It's very easily understood. So it's like it's grasped by us. But if you tell me that if you do a particular spiritual activity, it may benefit you and you can come out of it and you can really get the liberation or the love of God one day, it will be difficult for me to, to
you're
practice.
Asking things that you cannot see, why should you believe? Is that the question?
Yeah. And if I believe also, so how do I go about it as an initiative in the process?
Everything you believe is very much influenced by the unseen. You believe who your mother is? Huh? You believe who your father is? How do you know? Do you actually remember when you came out of the womb saying, ah, it's you? You have no remembrance. You believe, not because of your mind and senses, but because people have told you. Yes? Beyond your sense perception. Do you believe Mahatma Gandhi lived in India? How? You didn't see him. You believe because you read books and you hear from others. Reliable sources. Do you believe that there are atomic particles within your body? Huh? How do you see them? Do you see the protons and the neutrons and the atoms and the molecules? No, but you believe because science books and scientists tell you. Yes? So there are so many things we believe. Practically everything in history that we believe is based on what we have heard from others. And that's why you go to school. Practically everything you're taught in your universities and colleges are things that are beyond your sense perception. You need others to help you to learn. So the highest of all sciences, the greatest of all education, is understanding who you are, what is the origin of life, what is the origin of existence. These are important subjects. And the Vedas are history books that explain perfectly on the authority of God and have been accepted by the greatest, most self-realized and most persons throughout the world's histories. Persons who conquered others by the power of love. Yes? There may have been many great conquerors in India, but none are so loved and revered as Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. These are persons who created revolutions in people's hearts on the basis of their love, God's love. In the Western world, we were saying, there's not that many big people going to see Napoleon.